This is ABC Radio in New York. About this time each evening, we have some observations from Alex Dreyer in Chicago. Here is Alex Dreyer.
And it is the shocked and horrified nation that tonight contemplates the loss of its president. And even at this hour, the full impact of our loss is not complete. The aura of disbelief that such things can happen, even though they have happened in the past, still hangs heavily around all of us. The loss of the president is not easily assessed by anyone, and we would presume too much to attempt to analyze it critically and expertly here and now. He was a president of storybook stature, young, handsome, with a brilliant mind and buoyant personality. He had wit and charm and intellectual depth. He was superbly educated and eminently well qualified for the highest office in the land, despite his seeming youthful appearance. He was a war hero cut from historic cloth, a combat officer whose exploits won him acclaim and the unswerving loyalty of the men who served with him and for him. He was a loving husband and father who brought a special kind of human warmth to the great house on Washington's Pennsylvania Avenue. He was a man of great human feelings who constantly risked his political future to back causes that were not the most popular, but causes in which he believed, causes he felt were just. But no idea was ever killed with a bullet. And the president's ideas, his plans for a stronger and better nation, his driving ambition to create a better life for his fellow Americans, the very assassin who took his life among them, will live on. It has been said that no one, not even men of great dedication and skill like those who comprise the Secret Service, can completely protect the president of the United States from physical harm. And no group knows that better than the Secret Service itself. You cannot protect a man, any man, from an inspired maniac or... But most of all, you cannot protect a man from simple, blind hate. A lot of people kill the president today. And the killers are the hate peddlers who carry all kinds of names and labels. Hate peddlers who strike in the dark. Hate peddlers with their venomous little publications that come through the mains of power. Hate peddlers who harbor in their dark hearts cancerous notions about what is right and what is wrong. Like another president who was martyred, Abraham Lincoln, President Kennedy was the target of every half-baked extremist group in the nation. They attacked his Roman Catholicism, his fight to bring equal rights to American Negroes, his policies of social welfare, his dedication to the liberal philosophy of government, his program of social reform. John Fitzgerald Kennedy will not live in history as just a very popular president, whose term encompassed some of the most complex crises in United States history. The sick mind that thought up the heinous act that ended his life has immortalized his victim. John Fitzgerald Kennedy is now a martyr to the things in which he believed. And those ideals for which he fought are that much stronger now that he has died for them. And what a sickening irony it is that this man who came through so much should die at the hands of a man worth so little. But more than one pair of hands killed the President of the United States. And I think it is important to know what motivated the sick mind behind the assassin's fingers, and the answers are obvious. President John Fitzgerald Kennedy was murdered in cold blood by that small minority who feed on hate. Any one of their number might have fired the deadly bullets that ended the president's life, given the time and the place and the opportunity, and whatever kind of misnamed courage such an insane act demands of its perpetrator. Sow hate, and you reap death. And these things all Americans tonight should remember. The people who blatantly preach that Supreme Court Justice Earl Warren should be hanged can share in the guilt of this day. The people who spat and cursed their ambassador to the United Nations, Adlai Stevenson, can wonder if their own emotions are under proper control. And the people who hate their fellow man because the Creator happened to make him different from them would do well to examine their own consciences this day. We do not know the philosophy of the killer of President Kennedy, but we do know that to kill you must hate first or be completely insane. And even the insane person must be motivated to action. What makes a man move to the extremes of erratic action? Perhaps even the psychiatrist cannot give us the complete answer to that question, but this we do know. Every extremist who harangues meetings and writes in onerous publications and spreads venomous lies about those with whom he disagrees contributes to the hate that spills over into assassination by person or persons unknown. The killer may have been anti-Catholic, anti-Negro, anti-liberal, or what. Or he may have felt, as other deranged men have before him, that he was on a divinely inspired mission to save the world from someone or something. Mr. Kennedy's body has been returned to the Capitol, where it will lie in state at the White House tomorrow and at the Capitol building on Sunday. And tonight, one can only imagine the innermost feelings of Lyndon B. Johnson as he took the presidential oath of office a short time after Mr. Kennedy was pronounced dead. Despite rumors to the contrary, the president and the vice president were friends who enjoyed each other's respect and confidence. Even though they had once been political foes in the same party and had even opposed each other for the Democratic nomination for president, they had welded themselves into a close working team. Now Mr. Johnson is president of these United States, and already, although it is still only hours ago that a smiling President Kennedy was greeting that vast crowd in Dallas, Mr. Johnson carries the greatest single burden of responsibility in the free world. And a short time ago in Washington, President Johnson expressed his deep sorrow and personal loss and prayed for the help of all Americans and God. Few will doubt that this man can handle the job he accepts with so heavy a heart. And back in 1957, he suffered a massive heart attack. But he today is possessed of boundless energy and enough willpower for half a dozen men. Those who know Johnson best say he will be up to the monumental tasks that lie ahead. And in the confused days that will follow this one, leaders of both political parties will rally around the new president to assist him in every way they can. No man is indispensable. Mr. Lincoln was not. Franklin D. Roosevelt was not. John Fitzgerald Kennedy, not. But like those two men whom he admired and respected so very much, John Fitzgerald Kennedy was much loved and will be long remembered. Sometimes when a man dies in a violent way, a legend is born, and the things he held dear live on far beyond anyone's power to detract. This has been a dark and shameful day for the nation. Shameful. It has lost a great leader, and the personal loss to his family cannot even be estimated. But this is a worldwide loss as well. From all over the world, messages of condolences have been pouring into the White House, and no one will ever know what commitments and understandings between the president and other chiefs of state are in need of clarification now. But the nation will move on. In Mr. Kennedy's own words, it must move forward. It was moving forward with him. Now it must move forward without him. And tonight I am speaking to you from Chicago, where this program emanates each weekday. This is a city that dearly loved the president. It was and is, frankly, a Democratic town. But here in Chicago, the respect and admiration for President Kennedy transcended party lines. This is a city that always turned out in force and would wait hours to see Mr. Kennedy on his infrequent visits here. His picture peers out from many a window, from the plushiest high-rise apartments to the most grinding slums. The ex-war hero with the infectious grin seemed to have a special kind of appeal for Chicagoans who still remain rugged individuals, fiercely loyal to their local heroes. And today, Chicagoans grouped in the rain to discuss this day's loss in almost hushed tones. Places of entertainment were almost barren of customers. You could walk five blocks without seeing a smile. And I know I did. Chicago has a heavy heart tonight, and I'm sure its mood matches that of the nation. This is Alex Dreyer, ABC News, Chicago.
Now, this is Don Gardner back in the ABC newsroom in New York. There has been a statement issued by the Defense Department. A spokesman for Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara reads the statement now in Washington.
Secretary of Defense Robert S. McNamara issued the following statement this afternoon on the death of President Kennedy. As the leader of our nation and the free world, President Kennedy demonstrated a courage and strength of spirit that ensure his place in history. By those of us privileged to work with him, he will be cherished for his human warmth and the humor that never failed him. On behalf of the armed forces, I express the stunned grief of all of us at the tragic death of our commander-in-chief.
A statement from the Pentagon read by a spokesman for Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara. The Secretary of Defense McNamara will meet with President Lyndon Johnson at the White House tonight. The President also will confer with bipartisan leaders, leaders of both political parties in Congress. White House says that these meetings will begin just as soon as President Johnson has an opportunity to collect his thoughts at the White House. He is now there, having arrived back at Andrews Air Force Base in the presidential plane, along with Mrs. Kennedy and the body of President Kennedy as it came in from Dallas, Texas. And some observations on the scene in Washington by ABC's Quincy Howe.
I suppose, Don, that that message we just heard read, not by, but from Defense Secretary McNamara, has a couple of rather special features. McNamara is certainly as able a man as President Kennedy had in his cabinet. He was considered to be almost like a robot or a mechanical man, a person who had such a high degree of efficiency that he seemed hardly human. And at first, Washington was overwhelmed with his ability, and then somewhat even antagonized by the force with which he put his ideas through. I can't think of anything more typical and right than what he stressed in the little tribute he paid to President Kennedy. He stressed his warmth and his humor. He was not speaking of President Kennedy as the commander-in-chief and leader of the free world. He made those references. He wasn't speaking of him as a Democrat, and Mr. McNamara is himself a Republican. He was touching on those human qualities that probably at the moment are the ones that will make the strongest impact and that will make the president's reputation and continuing force felt more greatly than any acts that he has undertaken in his administration. It will be the character of the man himself that is going to come through, and that, as I say, came through even in the message from McNamara, who would be perhaps the least emotional of men. And yet, that was the note that he struck. Of course, what many are thinking of now is how President Lyndon B. Johnson is feeling, and that little brief message he gave with restraint and not even wanting to or daring perhaps to let himself go. That little message that Lyndon Johnson gave shows, I think, the shock that he has felt. And people will be wondering how he is going to grapple with this situation. The way he has summoned this cabinet meeting and meeting of the congressional leaders tonight indicates that he certainly has all the energies that he has ever possessed.
Thank you, Quincy Howe. President Lyndon Johnson is just about to arrive at the White House, and here is ABC's Irv Chapman in Washington.
President Lyndon Johnson is now at the White House. A helicopter bringing him from Andrews Air Force Base touched down at about 6:25, and a blast of warm wind stirred by its powerful jet rotors. An Army sergeant, a member of the crew, was the first to step out. He stood and saluted as the President, President Johnson, emerged, followed by his wife. Also on the helicopter were Acting Secretary of State George Ball and Presidential Assistant for National Security Affairs McGeorge Bundy. Mr. Johnson strode slowly across the lawn. He's wearing eyeglasses. He stopped a couple of times to shake hands with reporters he'd known from his Capitol Hill days. He walked past the open door of the presidential office, through which we could see the old naval desk used by John F. Kennedy. President Johnson and his party continued into the cabinet room, where he is meeting with top aides of the Kennedy administration. The leaders of both houses of Congress are expected for a meeting here in about an hour and a quarter. Irv Chapman, ABC, the White House.
And the White House has also revealed some of the details concerning the body of President Kennedy. It will lie in repose in the East Wing of the White House tomorrow between 10 in the morning and 6 in the evening. White House news aide Andrew Hatcher gave the schedule of viewing. The family will view the body first at 10 in the morning, followed then by President Johnson, Speaker of the House McCormack, and former U.S. presidents who may be able to travel to Washington and are expected there, then members of the executive branch of the government at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. At 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, the members of the Supreme Court and the federal judiciary. At 2:30, members of the Senate and the House, governors of the 50 states and their territories. Later in the afternoon at 5 o'clock, the diplomatic corps. The first day, always given over to the official family of the government in Washington. A funeral mass will be said on Monday in the Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in Washington for President Kennedy. It'll be said by Richard Cardinal Cushing. It'll be a low mass at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. There will be no eulogy. The low mass being said only by Cardinal Cushing, in contrast to the customary solemn high mass requiring three clergymen. It was Cardinal Cushing, a longtime friend of the Kennedy family, who gave the invocation at the president's inauguration. The cardinal who officiated at his marriage, baptized the two Kennedy children, and presided at the funeral mass for Patrick Bouvier Kennedy, the first family son, who died within 40 hours after his birth last August. Then on Sunday, the president's body will be taken to the rotunda of the Capitol, there to lie in state for viewing by the people of the United States. No particular announcement on the exact details of the burial of the president have been announced. However, it has been assumed that he will be buried in a family plot in Boston, Massachusetts. Here in New York City, the minister emeritus of the Christ Church Methodist, Dr. Ralph W. Sockman. Dr. Sockman.
There are times when our feelings are too deep for words, and this is a period when it seems to me we should be more in prayer and in silence. I have just come in off the streets of New York, and I have never seen New York in quite such a subdued and sad mood. Only 2 weeks ago tonight, I sat beside President Kennedy at a dinner here in New York. He was being the first recipient of the new Family of Man Award. It was given by the Protestant Council of New York City. And that very fact that a Protestant council gave its first award to a Roman Catholic president was a sign of the splendid brotherly spirit which characterized our president. Our sorrow, therefore, goes below all levels of race or of religion or of politics. The one word on our hearts at this moment is that our president is dead. And while we mourn the passing of this great leader, we give thanks to God that he gave us this man whose gracious personality and dynamic ability and alert mind and earnest purpose will be an inspiration to our children and grandchildren for the generations to come. We send our deepest sympathy for the family, and I know I speak for all the ministers of America when I say that regardless of creed, we shall ever hold John F. Kennedy as a great friend of the Christian tradition.
Dr. Ralph W. Sockman, the minister emeritus of Christ Church Methodist in New York City. ABC's Paul Glynn went down to St. Patrick's Cathedral on Fifth Avenue in New York City, the giant Roman Catholic cathedral in the center of Manhattan. Paul Glynn has some observations.
WABC, speaking to you from St. Patrick's Cathedral. A ceremony has just been concluded, attended by thousands of people from all walks of life in New York City at St. Patrick's. It was called a ceremony of absolution. It is not the pontifical mass of requiem, which will be held at the cathedral at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. Thousands of people have gathered for this ceremony, and outside the cathedral, thousands more listened as it was broadcast over the speakers. Paul Glynn, WABC, at St. Patrick's Cathedral.
ABC, its radio and television stations have announced that they will remain on the air indefinitely, devoting our entire broadcasting to coverage of news relating to the death of President Kennedy today. And just about this time on our radio network, Line